Thank you for listening in on our podcast in the series Intergenerational Conversations on Climate. The podcast brings together voices from high school students and senior citizens from around New Brunswick to discuss their concerns about climate change in our province. The project is the product of Voices for Sustainable Environments and Communities as part of your province's Environmental Trust Fund at Work. Today, we are in Gagetown with several conversations exploring concerns and hopes represented by senior citizens and high school students. Climate crises appear in global and national news with increasing frequency and desperation. Voices of concern can be heard every day. Voices of hope are less common. How do our friends and neighbors think about the new climate? Let's find out. Today, we have Olivia and Pat willing to share their thoughts. I'm Bruce Langus, and I'll be the facilitator. Good afternoon to you both.
Hi.
Hi.
I'll ask the same question of each of you, and then we will briefly, or in detail, discuss our answers. Then we'll move on to the next one, and we'll probably do five or six questions in the 30 minutes. First question to Pat, how familiar are you with our changing climate?
Well, I think part of it is I live with it not on a daily basis, but certainly within the year with our flooding, trying to do composting and putting out cardboard and plastics biweekly and really trying to promote that. I also see people trying to do better by buying local. And of course, then you hear all kinds of things, as you mentioned, on the news about climate change.
Same question to you, Olivia. How familiar are you with our changing climate?
Well, it's often a conversation topic in school. It's usually what we start with, like first period. We talk about what's going on in the world, how things are changing. Sometimes we talk about how we can fix them and how we can do better. We also talk often about how we need to do better and just overall help the environment so that we can have a better future.
Very good. So you're thinking about this pretty frequently, it sounds
yes.
like. Yes, yes. Would that be true for you too, Pat?
I think so. We don't have an environment like this classroom where it's brought up frequently. But I think certainly it is mentioned and discussed a bit when you're with groups, especially when things are happening in the community that are affecting the way that you live.
Mm-hmm. Next question to Olivia. Where do you get your climate information?
So as I've said, we talk about it a lot in class, and I took an environmental science class taught by Madame Monique Poirier, and she taught me a lot and really brought an interest towards like environmental science and just overall helping the environment. So I learned a lot from her, and I just learned from the news and tried to find as many reliable sources as I could.
Mm-hmm. Pat, where do you get your climate information?
Certainly from the news, both provincial and the federal information. Also get it through groups like Voices, who are really good about promoting what their concerns are and changes that can be made. And certainly in discussion with just general public and friends and, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you talk about this with your family?
Honestly, not as much as I should. Though we do talk about, you know, composting and all the things that people can do themselves on a daily basis at home. We do talk about that. But overall, generally, I would say no, which probably should be done more often. Yeah.
Olivia, do you talk to your parents about climate issues?
Yeah, I do. Often it's concern and just worried for the future. And I try to express it in the most calm way, I guess, and try to find solutions with them and see how to calm my anxieties for it and see what I can do to help the future for others, including me.
Are your parents concerned also about climate?
I think they are, especially with the amount that I bring up the topic so often. They are kind of forced to think about it.
Are there people in your family who are specifically concerned about climate, Pat?
I think pretty well everyone is on the same wavelength, which I think is generally the public wavelength, that if it's not affecting you generally or specifically, you tend to not think about it as often. And I'm, sorry to say that. I think the general public, that's basically what happens. If your gas prices are going up, now they'll talk a little bit about the climate change and is that part of this whole deal? Or my cousin's home in BC is just flooded. Now we can talk a little bit about climate change, or our flooding is higher than normal, or the land masses against the water, we're losing that. So I think unless it hits people specifically and personally, it's not the kind of topic that is just generally an everyday conversation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, some of these climate issues sneak in on us. They certainly do become part of the conversation. I know a couple of days ago I caught on CNN. I was more concerned about Johnny Depp. I wanted to hear about him, but they said that a third of the population of the United States was under a warning to stay indoors because of the heat. One third. And
that's huge, huge number.
Yes, exactly. I forgot about Johnny Depp. Olivia, who do you trust about climate facts? And I'm thinking about the noisemakers on TV. Political leaders, news readers, business people. Do you trust them?
I find I tend to trust my teachers and the people that I have grown up learning things from. And when I see things on the news, I always have to think about it before I agree with it. And I like to do my own research before I agree with something.
Pat, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, first of all, you have to decide or find out what the basis is for their opinion on climate change. If it's a business that is making money not worrying about climate change, their opinion of what it's all about would be very different from some company whose their focus is how to help climate change. I think, overall, generally in this country, our government has a fairly positive and appropriate view of climate change. I think their hands are tied in many ways to do as much as they might like. I know as a politician, you go in with big ideas of how you're going to help, what you're going to do, and then you get there and there's the money part, there's the political part, there's the business. So I do think there is certainly quality information coming from the government. And you have to watch out for your news services and certainly the web to make sure that they're reputable companies and the information is coming to you for a good, honest reason.
To follow up on that situation of trust, Olivia, have you ever written your MLA or your member of parliament about your concerns about climate?
I haven't written them, but I've participated in Fridays for the Future protests and gone to the parliament for these protests and just try to talk to them and get our point across.
Very good. Patty?
Well, I'm deputy mayor here in Gagetown, so we have had voices in to speak to the group, and as we did a few other organizations and people involved with climate change So as a council, we certainly have a concern, and we have been minimally working with the provincial government to look at what can we do for changes when we look at our front street of the village, how, you know, what will the future hold for parts of our village, and how do we change our municipal rules and laws around building and how far from the water, and we're looking at provincially and federally what their rules are and how it connects to our village.
That to follow up again on that situation, where should political action come from? Should it be in Ottawa? Should it be in Fredericton? Should it be in the municipalities where we live?
I think it's all of them together, because if they don't cooperate with each other, it won't work, because the fluidity of cooperating will like cause it to work. And just if there is a change that needs to be done, if they all do the same thing, it'll be done.
I think I totally agree. And sometimes the laws or the information has to come from the top and work its way down. For instance, if the federal government puts in a law or puts in place some kind of a program, then that's going to then help the provincial government do the same. For instance, with the greener homes, where you can apply for funding both federally and provincially to support fixing your home and making it more green and using less oil or wood. So I think, yeah, it has to come from all the way down, and including us. I mean, if we want to do something, we have to work with the provincial, especially the provincial government, to make changes.
Good point. Olivia, I'll ask the next question of you. Are you concerned about future climate threats?
I'd say I am, because as a teenager, I am part of the future, and I'm seeing this all change, and I'm seeing the effects of just what has happened in the past and how people are acting now. So it is a concern for me.
I agree. It is certainly a concern. I think, again, though, it's certain areas where you live, you will be more concerned, unless you're someone like young Olivia, who has a greater perspective on it, because most people live within their own little space. So here we're very lucky, considering what we have deal with climate change in comparison to other parts of the world. So I think it's about taking a global perspective rather than a minimal perspective of where you live. So yes, I think there's definitely some major things going to happen in the future.
How do those of us at the table here this afternoon, how do we get that global perspective?
I think part of it is what you're doing here today through this organization, making it more public, talking about it more, which I should be doing more with my family, my grandkids, and just being more aware of what's going on and how that may not affect something that's happening in Alberta or BC may not affect us today, but it's just the beginning of what may end up affecting us. So maybe we need to hear more about projected effects that it's going to have.
I totally agree with that. I think that if we don't talk about it more, there won't be any change, and it's just kind of stuck in a loop. But if there is awareness and if there's more conversations about it and it becomes common to talk about it, people will be interested and will try to fix it.
Good point. Good point. And that leads to another question here. I'll ask Olivia first. Who has more at stake in our changing climate? Teens or adults?
I find teens, because we're the future. We are living through all of it, and we're the ones that have to deal with the consequences of the past actions. And I'm not saying that everything in the past is wrong, because obviously not everyone is educated to learn like what is wrong and what's right and what would affect the planet the way it did. But I think that now that we know what it is and that we have to deal with it, it's important to deal with it and not just go, oh, yes, it's a concern. Let's brush it off, though, and think about it another day.
Pat?
Well, I think adults have a lot at stake right now because they are dealing with the effects as they happen on a daily basis or yearly or weekly, however the effects come in. So I think they certainly are affected by it, but I do believe that our future is where we have to focus and what can we do now for the future, for our children, grandchildren.
Right, right. How should that influence us talking to and listening to teenagers and to senior citizens?
Well, I think talking to teenagers like Olivia, who are aware of it and who are thinking about it, I think we need to be more conscientious and respectful of what they have to say. And possibly, maybe there should even be some kind of a youth group that's working with the government, if there isn't already, in management of climate change and what can be done. As we know, every generation has different perspectives and great ideas to bring to the table. So I think we need to really focus on everyone and what they can contribute.
I completely agree with that. I think the more inclusive it is and the more age groups that get to talk about it, the more solutions we can find and the more cooperative it would be.
Leads to the next question. Olivia, how would you feel about Canada giving the vote to 16-year-olds?
I would love for that to be a thing. Since I was young, I've always been interested in politics, and I've always felt like I should give my opinion about it. And I felt like not being able to vote would definitely affect how my opinion matters. Because if I can vote, I can show my opinion and it counts. But just telling someone who already has their opinion made is not really going to do a difference, personally, from what I've learned. And I find a lot of 16-year-olds know what they... Not all of them, obviously. Some aren't the smartest. But a lot of them do know like what they want to see in the future and what kind of changes they want. And they know who is like the best candidate for it.
Just a quick follow-up on that. In your high school, do you get a civics class, or at least half a semester, half a year of what the responsibilities of a citizen are?
They try to teach it to us in our social study classes, and in our language classes, it's often a conversation topic just to make sure that we're like aware of our duties as citizens, I guess, and just to make sure that we know what we're getting into when we graduate.
Pat, votes for the 16-year-old crowd.
I do think they should have that opportunity, but I think there's also, with opportunity, there has to be responsibility. So I think that if that happens, then part of the curriculum in the school should be more in specific and intense curriculum around political parties and political movements and how the government is run. Because it certainly is discussed, but not to the extent that 16-year-olds would really have a sort of a good focus on what they want, what they feel a government should be and do, and who that person would be to do that.
Mm-hmm. Good. The other part of that question, should we take away the vote to the 70-year-olds and older?
I don't think so, because their opinions are still an opinion, and I still think that they are like educated and they've lived life. They know, like, they've seen things, they know what's coming almost, because history repeats itself and like they understand the way it works. So even if we keep their vote, the amount of 16-year-olds that would vote would outbalance it.
Pat, what do you think? Take away votes from dinosaurs like me?
And me? No. Wouldn't that be a human rights issue? I'm sorry, but I feel I have as much right to vote as any other person in this world, in this country. And I think there's some good statements that she made about we have had some history in knowing political parties and, you know, what they've done in the past and how they've contributed to things like climate change. And some of the rhetoric you hear from political people, especially close to elections, we kind of can recognize that is a bit of rhetoric and not maybe something we should listen to completely and believe. So, I think we certainly have as much right as anyone else.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. Glad to hear that. This question is a little bit of fantasy, but if your grandparents agreed to fund all of your expenses for the next 2 years for you to become a green caped crusader, what one project would you tackle first? And this could be local, nationwide, or international.
Imagining that the money would be unlimited, even though it's not, but if it was, I'd try to just work with climate change and making sure that the whole world is educated, because that's what is necessary. And then once people are educated, giving them the resources to deal with it, being able to like find more local shops instead of ordering online and having to deal with shipping because that causes pollution, or even just like making simple switches from plastics to reusable items, just educating people. That's the big thing that I'd like to do.
Pat, as a new green cape crusader, what would you tackle first?
I think water. A focus should be water. As we know, that's our lifeline. So I think it would be about cleaning up the water systems, working with industrial companies who put their waste in the water, to see if we could spend money to come up with alternate ways to get rid of that waste that isn't affecting the water. Mining, all of those organizations and industries that pollute the water I would spend the money on trying to change that.
Excellent, excellent. We'll wrap it up at this point. Let me thank our participants, Olivia and Pat. And I also want to thank Cameron Davidson, our engineer, for recording the session and producing today's podcast. Thank you all.